I got the worst haircut of my life yesterday.
Oh. No, after all this time?
After all this
waiting.
Time. Right? I waited. I didn't cut it myself. And I went. And I think I made the mistake of saying that I was like, I kind of, you know, because she said, oh my God, it's so long. And I said, you know, I'm okay with it being a little bit longer because this is the first time I've been able to put it up, having a party, blah, blah, blah. And I said, so I just need a little bit taken off the back and, you know, all my layers trimmed up. But what happened was she just stopped layering right here.
Oh, no, like a mullet? Like a mullet kind
a little
of thing?
It's like she didn't take enough off here. She just layered basically right in here. And so these bits stick out and then there's this these long pieces. So I'm like, I'll be wearing a hat for like 2 months, man.
Can you go back and have her cut the bottom a little shorter? Do you want to do that to even it?
Well, you know, Gemma did a little hacking to it yesterday. I did a little hacking to it. I don't think anything's going to help. I just don't think anything's going to help. It's just a really bad haircut. Never.
Oh, aw.
Yeah. I can't even. Jay, I just want to put like towels over all the mirrors in the house. I don't even want to catch a glimpse.
Oh my God. Like you're sitting Shiva when they put the towels on the mirrors.
I don't even want to catch a glimpse of the death of long hair. So it's bad.
Oh, so, geez, I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, it's brutal. So I'm drinking myself into a stupor over it.
There you go. What are you drinking today? Because I have something new to share.
I got a keeper.
Oh, I don't know if I could beat that.
This is the one that starts in Florida and ends in Britain. So
yes, yeah.
Smoked honey bourbon.
Wow.
And keeper, because you asked me if you could get this in the States. I did a little research. Yeah. I actually think that you probably could get it in the States. But Keeper is a brand that it's the honey. So they make, it's, you know, even though they do make the bourbon, they make gin, they make rum. They have all these things that are made with like British ingredients.
Oh, with the honey.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, enjoy that, you know, with your haircut.
I will. And look at, I've like put such a dent in it. I just got it last Thursday. So between Eurovision and the bad haircut, I'm putting a dent in it.
I've been known to do that myself. And I've got something new for us today. Okay, so I wanted to get that violet drink that you had the last time, the Parma Violet.
Parma Violet, yeah.
I couldn't find it here. So I tried to like emulate it, which doesn't always work out great for me, but I started with this gin. This was recommended by the guy in the store because I told him what I was trying to emulate. Okay. It's called Love Eden Mill St. Andrews Gin.
Okay.
Got this kind of cool top, like the top on a
maple. Yeah, yeah.
And it's made with like a floral. It's gin made from flowers. So he said because of that floral taste, it might go very well paired with this creme de violet liqueur.
Okay, so you've basically made your own.
I tried to make my own. Yeah, only yours was clear, and mine has this pretty purple.
No, actually, you know what? Mine was purple, but it had sparkles in it, so it looked like almost purpley silver. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, this has got the purple. Yeah.
What do you think when you taste it? Does it taste like the violet candies?
Yeah, I mean, I think, yes, I think I have the blend better this time. He didn't know how to tell me in parts how to make that. Yeah. So I tried it last night and it was a little too much of the purple stuff. Okay. So the violet. Okay. So I now put a little less of that in. And it does. It has that. It tastes like the Sensen gum. The violets were the candies.
The
was the gum. And I remember my friend used to have those because it would cover up smoking.
Yes.
And she didn't want mom to know that she was smoking. But we used to go out to the discos So she always had Sensen on her. So I love that. I still look for it. It's hard to find, but it's still out there.
It's true. Oh, man.
So that takes us back, right?
Yeah, that really does. It's a dig in my mom's purse.
Cheers to your haircut. Yeah, right.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for that. So show 35, and we have managed to land Kristen Baker. Some people might know her, some people might not, but she has a platform for lesbian content, and she's made sitcoms and movies. And if you remember Bridget McManus talking about Christmas at the Ranch,
that's
Kristen. She directed and she produces this, and she's got a big announcement because she just launched her own film company.
Wow.
And it was picked up in Variety. So I'm going to let Kristen in to tell us about it.
I love when you hear women doing this kind of stuff.
Exactly. Oh, Kristen. Yeah. Yeah, there we go. There she is. All connected. Can you hear us?
Yep.
There she is.
Hey.
Look at you, like a little executive there in your perfect setting.
I always wonder what it looks like to people. I'm like, I got a fake tree. I got like a weird thing, like a, what is that? The treadmill and a bar.
I wouldn't have known that was a treadmill. I should have known that, but yeah, exactly. So Kristen, this is my co-host, JD Danner.
Hi, JD.
Hello. Nice to meet you.
I told you about Jay because she's a musician. So
I
specifically put her on your radar. That's what I do. Yeah. I care about people.
I like that you do that, Denise. And I love what you do, Kristen. I think it's great. I just said before you came on, it's great to see women doing what you're doing.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. You are like a workhorse. Like, you just take it on, man. Like, you take it, take it on, and you power through. And I love that. I love that. I actually... when we have to do the promotion of this podcast, which will go up on Sunday, I'm definitely using the picture of you in action, directing with a coffee in your hand. That's exactly it. That's my vision of you all the time.
That's me. That's me. So
I was telling JD a little bit about Tello Films, which is how we first met. When you launched Tello, we did a lot of cross promotion and had a lot of fun with that, but you're on to bigger things.
Little bit. Yeah. Just trying to, you know, climb the mountain.
So you got your own production company? Like, I want to make sure, because I read the article and I know I was in such a stupor when I was reading it. So I don't really know how much I process. So why don't you go ahead and tell us about that?
Yeah. So, you know, I'm really looking to kind of get bigger budgets and be able to go into some like different storytelling verticals. And, you know, Tello, and I love Tello, it will always be, you know, at the heart and foundation of everything that I do is storytelling for our community. It just seemed like if I wanted to kind of broaden, you know, what I do, I really needed to kind of start my own production company. And so Intello has some other investors and co-owners, and I just really wanted to have like a very clear, like, this is my thing, this is what I'm doing, you know, kind of movement forward.
And this is great. And do I have this right? You already have, like, Christmas at the Ranch is in post-production. Is that going through your production?
Yeah, that's a bigger production. Yeah.
And will that be out for our holidays?
It will.
How in God's name do you manage to put together a film in the middle of a pandemic?
Oh my God, it was not easy.
I'm stunned.
Yeah, we did it, and no one tested positive. We didn't have to like do anything, like halt production. It was just like, whoo, like the stress. Movie making is hard already. It's very fun, but it's hard. And then just throw a pandemic on it, and you're just like,
wow.
That is crazy. We had Bridget on.
I saw it.
Yeah, and she was telling us that she did wardrobe for that.
She was a godsend, because I was like, you know, normally what you would do is like your wardrobe person would be in town, and you would come here and you would do fittings and then you would go and do what, like what you needed to. But all of my actors coming in were in LA, and you know, you couldn't do like the normal wardrobe sessions. So I was like, who can I, like, who's a badass mofo who gets shit done and who I can trust with my life? And it was like Bridget.
Yeah.
Yeah. Perfect. She was amazing. She was amazing.
She said she had to do everything like from her car. Like,
she did. Yeah. She was running around
the door, go sit in the car, send pictures.
Yeah. Yep.
You find exactly. a way.
Yeah.
You have do, to find right? a way. You,
yeah. And Bridget's one of those like problem solving people who's just like, full steam ahead, don't say no, figure it out, problem solve. So she was just, yeah, she's amazing.
That's great, because you've worked with her like in with her in front of the camera.
Yeah.
Like I didn't know that she had a hidden talent here. This is new to me. So that was pretty cool. But what I love about what you do too is that you your content is just so perfect. Like I remember a time when there just wasn't a place to see, you know, people like ourselves. And when you created Tello, I think one of my all-time favorites was Roommates with Julie.
Roomies with Julie and Brandy. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that had Abby McEnany in it before Abby like went big and has her own TV show.
Wow.
Yeah. Abby's in that. Yeah. She plays Sue Fox.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Abby was just like, she's just amazing. I'm so happy for her.
Yeah, she's doing
it. Is her show coming back? Do you know if her show's coming
I thought
back?
It got a season two. I think it was probably, you know, put on hold because of the pandemic, but I assume it was just sort of a COVID hold, and that I know it was greenlit. I mean, I know season two was greenlit, so.
Yeah.
I did.
Yeah.
I think I just read an article that they're going to start, either they've started or they're going to start filming.
Yeah. Oh, when you have, you know, smaller budget things, it, you know, for shows, it just doesn't make sense to push and do it during COVID when you could just really like, the small budget's already racked up to a big budget. So I'm sure for like a certain budget threshold, it was just put on hold and said, you know, let's wait until, you know, things clear up.
Right. So
I relate to Abby a lot with her OCD. Sorry. I love her character. I don't know if that's how she is in real life, but I love the OCD thing, the bathroom thing, the whole thing. I could like totally relate to that.
There's not a, I'm sure there's nuanced differences between the two, but that is very much a part of Abby. And she's just like hilarious and lovely and like kind. She's just a wonderful, again, like when good things happen to people, like Abby, you're just so excited. You're like, thank God. Yes. Like you're ridiculously talented and kind and you deserve all the things. Like, yes. Yeah. Yes. Give her more. Yeah.
She's something else, man.
Yeah.
But you've got some cool people that you're working with. Like Bionic Woman. First thing.
Lindsay Wagner.
Wow. That's awesome.
She's an American treasure.
Biggest crush of my youth, next to, you know, a couple of the Angels, Charlie's Angels, but
totally.
Yeah, I had the Bionic Woman doll and everything. Like, it was,
just
part of my childhood. So that's super exciting. Like,
yeah.
Like, where do you, seriously, this is going to sound so raw, but I don't mean it that way, but like, where do you get the balls to just like send Lindsay Wagner a script?
You go through your casting director and her agent, and then they go, well, Lindsay would like to read the script, and you just go like, holy shit, okay, cool. And then you send it on, or they say like, you know, can we send it to her? And then the one that like really kind of gave me pause was when it was like, well, Lindsay would like to get on a phone call and talk about the script with you before she signs on. And I was just like, oh my God. You know what I mean? You're just like, and they're like, you know, like here's her phone number. And then you're just like, oh my God. Yeah. So I last time I was in LA, I had lunch with her and met some of her family. She's just lovely. Just again, like she's just such a lovely, lovely woman.
She does seem like a super like warm, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like you wouldn't have, I mean, like, yeah, the nerves, but I feel like she would put him at ease like that, you know?
Yeah. She also, though, you can see, like, she doesn't take any shit. So, like, she really just has this, you're just, it's just like mad respect, you know? Yeah. Great.
So what, that one's already in post. Are you already, and so does that mean you're working on something else already or?
Yeah, we have a fourth holiday rom-com that we're hoping to do. It's out to a couple of places. I have a manager now, which is like super, super fancy and exciting for me. And so he's reading it. It's called Marian Gay. And it came through our pitch to production, like way back in 2018, when we first launched it, we picked three scripts that we just absolutely loved. And the third script was Marian Gay. So that one's kind of going out right now. So we'll see. I haven't started officially fundraising for it yet. Cause I want to see how Christmas at the Ranch does. And I want to, but I'm, you know, I've plenty of time, knock on wood, to get it in the can. But, yeah, so I feel very passionate to have, you know, a holiday rom-com for the community, like each season. Like I just feel, and then we have some other stuff that's out to different places, through a Baker production. So
tell me a little bit about the documentary that you're doing.
Yeah, A League of Our Own. So I was brought in, so I went through a breakup with my girlfriend of like 4.5 years this past October. And we were supposed to, for her birthday, we were supposed to go to Asheville and like go, and I have a cousin over there, and like go to the hot, these like at this hot springs outside of it. And then she like literally broke up with me like the day before we were supposed to go. So I was like, okay, well, that trip isn't happening. But my cousin was like, oh, just come out to Asheville anyway, you know? And I was like, okay, that, you know, that would sound good. So the co-producer on it, who's also a producing friend of mine, I totally forgot, like sends me a photo of, she's like, look how beautiful Asheville is. And I was like, holy crap, I forgot that you're going to be in Asheville. And she was interviewing Kelly McGillis. And I was like, okay. And she goes, also, we don't know what the F we're doing. Can you like come out here and kind of help us? And I was like, I just happened to be free and without a girlfriend. Like, yes. So it's just like all this like crazy kismet stuff happened. And like after that, like she had gotten the cameras and the lighting. And so I helped her set it up and like ran all the things and got her an editor. And so it was like, after that, we were just like off to the races with this project. So the documentary is all the jumping off point is the 30 year anniversary of this, the International Women's Flag Football Association. And they have the Kelly McGillis Classic, where they bring in all the teams from like all across the country and around the world for this big football tournament. So we were interviewing Kelly for it. And then we actually ended up booking an interview with Diana Nyad as well.
Oh, the swimmer.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
So it really has become, and this woman, Diane, who started the league, has gone to countries like Afghanistan and Pakistan, and has taught women's flag football in these countries where, you know, women are automatically sort of a second class citizen. So it's really looking at like women empowerment through sports. And so we really sort of trace back like all these different aspects of how women's empowerment really comes through, through sports. And so we're getting these interviews who've been involved with the organization. And we're just, and so we did like a short documentary, like a 22 minute one for their 30th anniversary. And then we sent it to one of my people, and he was like, this is incredible. You need to take this and like really spend some time and do like a feature length documentary on this. And like, we'll submit it to like Telluride and Toronto and all these film festivals. And so, yeah, you know, we already sort of have someone who's like interested in repping it, which is so cool. But yeah, it literally sort of came from a breakup. So that I became involved in this project. And so we came in as a co-production.
Oh, wow. That is such an awesome topic.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And documentaries are hot right now. Go ahead, Jay.
They are. I was going to say, when you start a project like this or another, and even starting your own production company, do you need to know ahead of time who you're funding, like where your funding is coming from? Or do you just start filming and then put something together, like you just said, and pitch it to someone to see if you can get the funding to complete the whole production?
Yeah, I mean, there's about as many answers as there are people. So anyone can start a, like you all could start a production company. You might not have anything, but like you can start a production company and then like, you know, start to like write your own stuff. I think, you know, for me, I don't like to do anything that I don't know where at least some of the funding is coming from. So right, I don't want to, like, I have 6 scripts, you know, that are in different phases of being written and different, you know, variations of being pitched. But I would never put out there like this project is going to be made, or I would never start talking about it unless I knew where the funding comes from. Now that's right. Not everyone. There are some people who will talk about their projects when they're in the middle of writing them, and then they'll go, "Oh, I'm in the middle of writing this, and I'm super passionate about it, and blah blah blah," and then they don't make it for another 3 years, but they're still right. Sort of like talking about it or having someone read it or rewriting it, and they're pitching it here. And I just don't really love to do that until I know when it's going to be made.
I agree. That's I mean, I was in a documentary, it's been so many years now. I was just one of the people in it for musicians that play in South Florida. And it just never really came to happen. And it just seemed, oh, this is so exciting. It's going to be, but you're right. When you talk about it too much before you have kind of the everything, especially the funding in place.
Yeah.
So it seems to me like I admire so much what you do, because it's a bold move, in my opinion, to write something. But you also, like, I would be in the same frame of mind making sure you have something to back that up, to make it happen. Because if you talk about it too much and then it never happens, it's like, then what are you gonna talk about your next one? Like, no one's gonna pay attention to you because you never got that other one off the ground.
Right.
You know?
Exactly, so. Exactly. And this town is so, you know, this industry is so crazy. Like, you have something that all of a sudden looks like it's going to go and looks like it's going to happen, and then some weird thing and it's pulled out. So it's like, it's almost like until I know that there's a date that the cameras are going to be up, you know, I don't love to talk about it. I mean, I do think documentaries are a little different than scripted things. So for A League of Our Own, you know, we have a small sizzle reel and the purpose of it was for this 30-year anniversary thing. So like the first iteration of it is complete. We just feel like there needs to be a bigger audience and it's a greater story to tell. So you know, and we have enough stuff sort of like in the can that we're just trying to schedule interviews with people. So we have the funding, but it's going to take a little bit just to kind of schedule the interviews that we need.
That's fantastic. You wear a lot of different hats, you know, like I was at that Klexicon thing with you in London, and you were at every panel. He's like, I passed Kristen in the lobby, just buzzing off to another room. But it's just because you're a wealth of information, you know? And I think the cool part is that, you know, like Jay and I, we were talking about script writing, you know, like because we're always bouncing ideas and stuff, like talking about stuff all the time. And she's like, we should do it. And I'm like, you know, like I showed Kristen something that I wrote. She's like, oh, first of all, you got to get this screenplay for me. Second of all, you got to write more than 5 pages.
First, right. And now the ending.
I know. Like, I take off like a bat out of hell. And I go, yeah. She wants to work together. I'm like, nah, you really don't want that. Trust me.
I've kind of done that with my music. Like, I've boldly done things that I didn't know if it was going to happen, but I'd like when I got to play at, for the Indianapolis Colts. Well, no, that was something else. When I got to play at Guantanamo Bay, I was doing a homeland tour performing at military bases during the holidays to perform for our troops that were stateside and military families. And I was doing, usually it was mostly Army, Air Force, but I also did some Navy bases. And every time I was on this, every time I visit a base, there'd be a girl that was just there before me and they would be talking about her and whatever. And I had not heard of her, but she was young and she was upcoming. And so I read where she was going to be playing at Guantanamo Bay. And I'm like, God, I'd like to play at Guantanamo Bay, but you know, I don't know how to get there or how, what do you do? But I'm like, well, she was playing at all the same places I was before this. So let me call Guantanamo Bay. And I just boldly picked up the phone and called a number for Guantanamo Bay, the number on the website, and ended up getting a Memorial Day show. They were like, oh, sure, we need a band for Memorial Day.
Oh my God.
We're having a 3-day thing for the people over here, the guys over here. And I'm like, okay. And I only had 6 weeks and I did not have a band at that point. I was playing solo.
Oh my God.
I was touring solo acoustic. And I was like, I took it anyway, but it took me a while to get, it took me scrambling to get a band together in 6 weeks because they had to take off of work because it went beyond Memorial Day. They flew us there in these tiny little planes. But the point is sometimes you have to make that bold jump.
Yeah.
Just because you think you want to do it, but you kind of have to have the whole thing in place. And that's one of the times I didn't. I didn't have a band because I didn't think they were going to say 6 weeks. I thought they'd say 6 months from now or something, you know. Sure, we need somebody for Memorial Day. And then here it is like, you know, April. And I'm like, okay. But yeah, sometimes you got to take it. Like, I knew if I didn't take it, I might never get to go there because they'll have other bands, or they were starting to have unrest in the prisons at that point. That's when it first started with the hunger strikes and everything. So I'm like, if I don't take this now, I may never get to go. I'll get a band. And I just accepted it. So I kind of get that too. Like, you don't always have the whole puzzle, but you got to try, you know?
But don't you feel like was there any part of you that was like, I booked this, which means I'm going to find the band. Like, it's going to all work out. Like, didn't you have that, like, ultimate, like, okay, like,
now
this is going
to
happen. I don't know how. I'm going to work. I'm going to, you know what I mean? Like,
I'll tell you, I equate this with, like, this is why you don't go on Facebook and put, all right, man, I'm starting a diet on Monday. Because you're stuck having to follow through with it if you put it out there. So,
yeah.
Well, you know what happened? Once I had that in place and I had the contracts and I knew I had to do this, you're right. You have to make it happen then.
Yeah.
And so I did. So, you know, by the grace of God, everything came together and I made that, you know, I put a band together. It wasn't necessarily the perfect band of my choice because it wasn't the guys I had worked with in the past because they were all busy doing other things for Memorial Day because it was only 6 weeks away. But I took the thing and you know what? I will never regret that because I don't know that I'll ever get to go back there. Things have changed so much. Yeah. They're not bringing bands there now.
Sure.
And so, yeah, like sometimes you just have to take that bold move and just do it and say, I don't know how I'm going to get this done. But once you, like you said, Kristen, once you make that commitment that it's your thing, you have to make it happen somehow. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. I know I signed when I was working on my book, I finally got a publisher and they hit me with like a 3-book deal. And I was like, sure. one book. Sure. 3. Yeah. No problem. And a year, you got it. No problem. But yeah, I had the contract. I had to honor it. So I did it in 6 months.
That was a bold move.
But see, that's like pedal to the metal. And I feel like those things only happen a few times in life.
Right. I mean, who's like anyone would love 1 book deal and they like gave you 3. And so like, you know what I mean? It's like they wouldn't, the universe wouldn't offer that to you if you couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Like, so you just have to go like, all right, I gotta like get this done, because like, you know, they're not going to say yes to a concert at Gitmo if you can't do it. Like if the universe doesn't offer that to you, if you can't do it. Like,
I like that. Yeah.
That's definitely the way to look at it. And, you know, these, you know, putting together a band and playing Gitmo is huge, getting a book deal is huge, but launching a production company and actually having films, like, that's like out of our realm, you know what I'm saying?
So that's bigger and bolder, way bigger.
You're very kind. You're very kind. Yeah.
Let's not forget that part. But no, you've actually had worked with like really cool people.
It's just been people that should not be working with me. I mean, it's sort of like, I'm like, don't tell them that they're like, I'm a little small, like, you know, but yeah, like, you know, it's just, I've been, you know, Marina Sirtis, who was in Star Trek Next Generation, Connor Trinneer, you know, Armin Shimmerman, Liz Vassy, you know, from CSI, and then
we all know
Better Than Chocolate, you know. It's like, actually Janina Gavankar was also in that, who's like Meghan Markle's like one of her best friends. I was like, I'm like holy crap, that's Janina.
She's a blast. We had her on our show, and she was at this is back when Don and I were doing a Lesbian Lounge, and
and when she was on the L Word.
I mean, like, I don't know how we got her. Like, I don't even remember how that even manifested. But she called in from her mother's house, and they were playing musical instruments like the marimba and the cymbals, her and her mom. And it was just like me looking at Donna, like, this took a weird turn. We were talking about the L Word, and then all of a sudden they started playing instruments, and we were like, just go with it. Just go with it, man.
Yeah. I have her number in my phone, her cell number, which it's, so all these like notifications will come up every night. I mean, I don't know if she would remember me, but it's just sort of funny that like, you know what I mean? It's like, so-and-so is on bloody blah. And I'm just like, how do I, she's in my phone. So it just, so there's, you know, and then, you know, working with Dom Provost-Chakley from, you know, Wynonna Earp and Emily Goss and Jessica.
Oh my God, Clark, that's a phenomenon.
Know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jessica's amazing. You know, I mean, I'm just like Amanda Rigetti, who is in The Mentalist for, you know, six, you know, main person there. Yeah. So you just sort of, you're like, oh my God, like, okay, cool.
But that's,
cool. You know,
that's a testament to the quality of the stuff that you're doing, because these people really attach themselves to it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like,
and the universe sent them to you. So
they absolutely did, JD. You know? They absolutely, yes. I have a very powerful production goddess. And she brings people, and I, you know, stuff happens at the last. I should mention too, like, I don't want to, like, Candace Kane and Dia Franken and Ashley Argota, like all the people who are in, like, I Hate New York. I mean, I'm just, it's my production goddess, and she's really powerful, and I just trust her. And she brings me people like Lindsay Wagner, and you just go like, I don't know how this happened, but I will accept this.
Right.
Thank you very much.
That's huge. Oh God, Candace Kane. I love her. Famous.
Oh, she's fantastic. We're working, well, actually one of the projects we're working on is a show with Candace, a gardening show. She is an avid gardener. And
really?
So I was, she has this ridiculous backyard, and I was over there with we were asking her for something to be on Brunch Date, which is on tele.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Free. And so I was like, I had visited her one time, and we had just kind of gotten caught up, and I was like, your garden is amazing. So I told my producing partner, I was like, well, let's go out to Candace's. So I hit Candace up. I was like, hey, we want to ask, you know, get you to be on the show. And we're sitting there, and we were like, and she was just describing her backyard. And I just looked at her and I go, we need to do a gardening show. And everyone was like, yeah. So it's called Candace Kane's Secret Garden. We've done a pilot.
Perfect.
Yeah, we did a pilot that's being cut together. And then we're gonna do like 10 more episodes, but she's just like this amazing gardener. And
I would watch this. Like, I would.
Right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah,
she's amazing. It was so fun.
I'm so excited because like two flowers bloomed in my backyard. So
yeah. Everyone got into gardening during COVID.
Yeah, it's so true. It's so true. I never did shit. And then last summer I was out there prepping and everything.
Exactly. So we're going to get Candace. So that's one of the things on the, on the production list.
Man, that's fantastic. Yeah. What a lineup, man.
Yeah.
What a lineup. So
exciting stuff.
For the films and stuff, we just have to wait till they come out, right?
Yes. Right. Yeah.
Okay. But for the Tello content, that's always there.
Always there. Yeah, always absolutely. There.
So that's fantastic. Yeah, that's good to know. Perfect. And is your goal like to have things released in theaters, or will they be streaming or online or Netflix, Amazon, that kind of thing?
Yeah, you know, so we have a movie that we've pitched to Amazon right now, so they're sitting with it. That, you know, and they kind of have potentially have a theatrical, so they'll go theatrical and then on their platform. So we'll see. We actually have run numbers for a vertical for theatrical. I think the theatrical experience is super important.
Especially now that you can again, exactly.
And I think for our community too, like, it can be really important to have a gathering place that we can watch our stories as a collective. Sure. Like,
yeah,
you know, definitely. People have watch parties all the time. Like, we had a lot of people who had watch parties for Season of Love, but there was just something about that, like, in theater experience that I think is, like, really critical. So we always want to try to have that in mind, if at all possible.
Well, mm-hmm. You put it out there, so I'm guessing it's going to happen.
There you go.
Production goddess.
That's right. This is the way things work. I'll send a give anytime my casting director, because if we lose someone or if there's a weird pivot, she'll be like, you're a production goddess. And I send her there's a gif of Beyonce, like, at her Coachella concert where she's like all in gold. If you just look up goddess, that's one of the first ones. That's what I said. This is my production goddess. This is what she looks like. It's Beyonce, like, all in gold.
Oh,
like,
that's so,
so she'll be like, oh, you're production goddess. And I'll just be like, send her the gift. And it's, and there she is. There she is, blessing us.
So now I take it you're going to be too busy to come for the Rain Dance Festival over here, like, when they have it again.
Oh gosh, are they going to do it?
Well, I think 2022.
Yeah, you know, I used to do, like, that web fest, like, you know, every year, but I think they canceled the web fest part of it. So
it's just okay.
Yeah, I mean, I London is, like, one of my happy places. I try to get to London at least once a year. In fact, I just booked a ticket. I'm going to Cannes in July, and I always fly through Heathrow, because, like, LA to Heathrow is the best. And so I'll be over there. And so I might spend a couple of days in London on my before my trip back. So
you know where to hang.
I do.
I like when Kristen visits, because she has no expectations. She just, like, gets up in the morning. She's like, okay, see you later. I'm out. And I'm like, oh, I didn't have to take her to Brighton. Oh God, I'm so glad I didn't have to take her into London. She just, like, goes and does her own thing. Yeah, it's been fantastic.
Self-sufficient guest.
She doesn't mind the cat, so it works out well.
Yeah, it's fine. We're good.
Well, listen, my friend, it was fantastic seeing you.
Oh, good to see you too. Nice to meet you too, JD. Yeah, good luck with the music.
We're going
to
let you get back to work, and, you know, we don't hold you up. Keep making our content for us.
We'll do.
It's been great seeing you. And
tell Gemma I said hey.
I will. She's already upstairs.
I'm sure. All right. Good to see you all. Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Nice to meet you.